There was one Zen master, a friend of mine. You know, in Zen they teach, the language they use is that when you do something, do it fully. When you walk, just walk. When you eat, just eat. When you sit, just sit. Be present with each thing. But he was sitting in the morning in his Zen center this morning, particular morning, eating his breakfast and reading the morning paper. And one of his students came and got very upset and said, you know, what kind of example are you, says Zen master? You say when you eat, just eat. And when you read, just read. And here you are sitting and eating and reading the paper. What kind of eating meditation is that? And he looked up and he said, when you eat and read, just eat and read. It's not to make a trip about it or to get idealistic, but it's to bring awareness and consciousness or mindfulness to what we do, to make that our life. I cannot stress enough the importance of training. You have had 5 piano lessons in probably the most important thing and the most important discipline in art that you'll ever have in your life. Not Vipassana per se, but the art of the spiritual life, of the heart, of inner awakening, whatever form it takes. Somebody asked the Dalai Lama, how can you know if your spiritual practice is working for you? And he said, well, you have to measure it in the right period of time. 10 years, 20 years, you see if something of benefit has come to you. You know, one lifetime, 2, 3 lifetimes maybe. He can look back, it's easy for him to say, right? It's not a short thing. If you want to have some value of it, you must do a regular practice, and you have to do it over some period of time. You won't learn piano or oil painting in a few quick lessons, I promise you. And this is very much the same, only deeper. So it requires that understanding. Now, some people ask, how do you put together sitting and the world of service, of caring for other beings? Isn't it kind of selfish to sit in a way when there's the nuclear arms race and all the rest of this? You can make a good case for either one. On one side, all of the suffering of the world that is experienced, the starvation, the wars, the difficulties, a great deal of it is caused by human beings, by greed, by fear, by prejudice, by hatred. There's enough food and enough oil and enough energy. There's just too much prejudice and fear and greed and anger. And so what the world needs is not another revolution and not another demonstration. You know, one revolution supplants another. It just goes round in circles. It needs somebody who faces those things and really understands how to be free of fear, or how to not be caught in their own aggression and prejudice. It needs not more oil or more energy or more food, but more love and really deep compassion and wisdom. And so it's a radical political act to sit, because somebody's finally facing that and learning about it. And then you can bring it alive in the world. If you haven't learned it in yourself, how can you change the world? Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. Now, the other side is that we still build 3,000 warheads a year, nuclear killing bombs. We spend $1 trillion a year on killing machines to kill and maim and harm people, women, children, men of all kinds. And they're used worldwide. We're wrecking the environment, the ozone, the Amazon. And it's not a time for us to just sit. We also need to respond to that. So which do you do first? There isn't a right answer. It's important that there are people who are sitting in caves in the Himalayas and do nothing with the whole of their life but develop compassion and infinite loving kindness for the world. They affect us. I'm sure they do. I promise you they do. And it's important that there are people who are working in political and economic ways to change things, but not from anger or aggression, because it won't change it. When we traveled in India, my wife and I, on one of these trips, she had a series of terrifying dreams of death, and she thought she was going to die, actually. And then she had this dream of her brother throwing up something, and just this terrible dream. And then the next evening she had this beautiful dream of him with the two spirit guides. She has two Native American spirit guides that come to her at times in her life of when she really needs guidance. And he was there too. It was very strange and a scary time. A week later, we received a telegram that he had died. He had committed suicide, actually. And he had died the night she had the dream of him in the fashion that she had dreamed that. Very painful in many ways. But fortunately, she had the dream the next night of him being just fine after that, and being one of her spirit guides. How could it be? We were in Mount Abu in Rajasthan at an ashram, that she would have that dream of her brother dying on the night that it happened, a week later get that telegram. I ask you, how is that possible? You know how it's possible. Because we're connected. Yeah. We're really, really connected with one another. The whole world is connected. And what you do in your heart affects the world. So that's one side. The other side is to serve. Your practice is to give, to love, to serve. And so there are times to go and work in the refugee camps, and there are times to do AIDS work, and do it. Thank God you have your sitting. Do it from a place of understanding. Do it from a place of letting go rather than a place of being something special. I went to see a fellow who was in the hospital. I think I told you this story early. Did I tell you the story about the guy who had a brain tumor? And his life was so changed by coming that close to death. He lived in a really different way after he had faced death. Please, the basic teaching of spiritual life is not to wait, because you don't know that you have time. It's actually to start to live now the way you'll wish you had lived when you come to the end of your life. Because there aren't many questions at that time. Did I love well? Did I really let myself live in a conscious or full way? To care for myself and the earth, to learn to let go and be free, because you really need to learn that. That's the art of living. Now, a few more things. I've said before that a daily sitting practice is critical, and I've described it. You need a place, a regular time. It's useful to have some spiritual books to read to remind you, to not be idealistic about it, but just to sit and take what you get. Other things that are helpful. Tapes are good, just to remind yourself. Driving and listening to tapes can be helpful for certain people. Support that we give for one another. The Buddha was sitting in the forest, and his attendant said to him one day, "It seems to me, O Buddha, that half of the holy life is having good friends." And the Buddha said, "Not so, Ananda." Ananda often asked the questions that weren't quite right. And Ananda said, "Well, what is it then, please, sir?" And the Buddha said, "In fact, the whole of spiritual life is sangha, is having good friends, is kalyanamitra, is the word, is association with noble friends and with good or noble ways of living and noble ideals and noble practices." And there's a tremendous support that we give to one another, because we swim upstream in spiritual life. The values of the culture, if you watch TV or open our magazines or whatever, are not values that are primarily based on non-harming and on compassion and generosity and wakefulness and not being caught in the material things. That's not the values of our culture. We need help. Basically, take all the help you can get. So, do a retreat sometime. Day-long retreats after these classes will be a piece of cake. 10-day retreats are really wonderful. And there's a variety of them throughout the year. 10 days of sitting and walking in silence, Dharma talk in the evening. You usually sit for 45 minutes, then you walk for half an hour, 45 minutes. You never sit too long, and then you go walk and sit again. And in 10 days, you get so still and so deep And you really learn much more the art of meditation. It's as if you went off on a camp to learn rock climbing, and you spent 10 days doing nothing but rock climbing, or 10 days doing nothing but painting. You'd really learn a lot. So they're very deep, and they're wonderful, and I recommend them to people. It's not that you're supposed to become a meditator, but that this is a practice and a way, a tool, a discipline, something that you can use to recover or reclaim your true nature, your deepest love, your greatest compassion, your deepest wisdom. There was a young girl who wrote a letter to Ram Dass after our first summer at Naropa Institute, where we all talked together in 1974, Trungpa Rinpoche, Ram Dass, Joseph Goldstein, a number of us. She went home to parents who were fundamentalists who thought she was possessed and wanted to exorcise her or have her deprogrammed. And she talked about how difficult it was, and in the end of her letter she said she had figured something out. She said, I realize that my parents hate me when I'm a Buddhist, but they love me when I'm a Buddha. Can you hear the difference? It's not to become a Buddhist or a meditator. Spare your friends and family that. It is to become a Buddha, which is your birthright, which is your true nature. And to do that is not so easy. It's wonderful. It's also not so hard. One teacher said there's the easy way and the true way. But it requires your care and your surrender and your discipline and your willingness to face yourself through some practice. It's not just an idea. And I hope the practice that we've done here gives you a sense of how you can work with your body and your breath and your feelings and sounds and eating and speech as spiritual life. I'd like to end in a couple minutes doing this loving kindness meditation, and maybe with one last story. But we'll take a few minutes for last questions before I do that.
I found what you're saying very helpful. I'm still having a problem with the acceptance of what is and the need to fight evil.
Do you know the Serenity Prayer from AA? How God grant me the to accept what I cannot change, the courage to change, and the wisdom to know the difference. That is what it is. The first step that's necessary is acceptance, even of evil. If you want to face Hitler or you want to face the nuclear arms race, which I see is worse now, the first thing you have to do is really look it in the eye and say, we're building 3,000 nuclear warheads a year. These people are nuts. We have this program called MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction, which is the program for the military in the two biggest countries of the world. We are arming, we are paying our budget deficit and our trade deficit by selling killing machines to every country almost that will buy them. We are arming the planet in order to pay our import-export duties. So the first thing is you got to face it and sit and really feel what that means. And then, if you're ready to get up and be angry at those people, what you are is them. So that doesn't help very much. And I think that the demonstrators outside the Pentagon during the Vietnam War, you know, if anything, might have made it last longer. Those generals were inside saying, I'm not going to stop this war with those demonstrators out there, you know, protesting. I mean, I think that's how it worked. It created its opposite. So first you face it, and then secondly, you find some other place in yourself that's deeper. The place that Martin Luther King spoke of, or Gandhi, in which to relate from, of fearlessness and compassion. And you say, I must do something. But you do it from a place not of separateness or making enemies, but of seeing the suffering and saying, this requires a response, and it requires one now. That help? I'm glad you asked that. Please.
I've been wondering whether the meditation is a discipline, that the purpose and effect of it is not the ability to meditate. meditate, but the ability to have the residual of that applied to your actual life in the world.
Yes. Meditation is called meditation practice. And it's called practice because you practice it in order then to be able to live it. Its purpose is to create a different way of our living. That's correct. Otherwise, it's useless. You know, you might as well watch TV or take drugs or something like that. I mean, you just want a little experience, or go to Baja or Bali or something like that. All right, let's do our last meditation, and then we'll end. Sit comfortably for this one. This is a loving-kindness meditation, which is, in essence, a complement to the Vipassana, and that you can do it at the beginning or end of a sitting as a way to bring a spirit of that kindness to your sitting practice. So let your eyes close gently. Let your body be soft and your breath be soft. And then bring your attention to the area of the heart. See if you can feel the heart and the breath together, as if you could breathe into the heart and breathe out. Feel your breath as if it came in and out, right there at the heart center. And then traditionally, the loving-kindness meditation begins by directing loving-kindness toward ourselves. Because if there are things that we hate or can't accept in ourselves, it's very hard to be loving of those things in others. So through the words I say, try to develop the feeling or the spirit or the sense and the thoughts of loving-kindness. For yourself first. May I be filled with loving kindness. May my heart open with kindness and peace. You deserve it. All beings do. May I be filled with the spirit of loving kindness. May I be peaceful. Feel a compassion for yourself as well, for your struggles and sorrows. We all have our pain and our sorrows. May my heart open and may I touch this sorrow with compassion and loving kindness. Sense yourself as a child. You were a little child once who didn't have to, who shouldn't have had to do anything to earn love. Little children simply are there to be loved. And then with your heart, hold yourself as this child. With great kindness, you've come into this life. May you receive all of the experiences of the body, all of the feelings, all of the moods and thoughts with the spirit of loving kindness. may you be peaceful. Now think of someone you love a lot. Bring them into your heart. Share the feeling. May they too be filled with loving kindness. May their hearts open, be happy. Feel a compassion for their sorrows and struggles. How much you love them and would help them. May they be filled with loving kindness and peace. Let another person or two into your heart that you love. Let it grow bigger. May they be happy and their hearts open. Loving kindness and peace. And let your heart open further. Let in all your friends, people you love. May they all come into your heart. May they all be happy. May they be filled with loving kindness. Let it grow further. Let that spirit fill this room, all of us who've sat together for this 5 weeks. Let there be a field of loving kindness so that all of the 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows that make up every human life can be received with this heart open, compassionate, loving and free. And sense or feel or imagine it gets bigger than this room. Let it go in every direction. In front and behind, to the left and to the right, above and below, to fill San Anselmo and the Bay Area and the whole of the earth, as if you could cover the earth with your feelings of loving kindness. Picture the earth as a ball that you could hold in your arms. And take it into your arms and your heart and hold it, all of the oceans and continents and the multitude of beings, the whales and fishes and birds, the insects and trees, the jungles and deserts and people. And hold that earth with the heart of loving kindness and compassion. May all beings be touched by the heart of loving kindness. May all beings, those newly born, those in pleasure, those struggling and sorrow, those dying, those in between, may every creature and being be touched and opened and healed by the force of loving kindness and compassion. And may the power of our heart and our goodness and our love bring that light to the world and bring a freedom to our lives and those of all beings. This meditation, as I said, can be used to start or end your sitting if you want to do a little loving kindness to soften yourself before you practice, or when you've gotten quiet, to extend that feeling. Some people find it artificial. It feels mechanical. Was that so for a few of you? Probably. And if so, that's all right too. You can experiment and find words or phrases that make it work better for you. Or you might find that it's just not your thing, which doesn't mean you're not loving. Be loving enough then just to let that go and go back to your breath or the next body sensation. It is an exercise. But it's a meditation that if you work with it, most people find actually can develop and cultivate. And if you do it daily or regularly, it gets stronger. Whatever you put in the garden and nourish and fertilize, it starts to grow. The nice thing about it is you can do it not just sitting. You can do it walking down the street. May this person be happy, and may that one be filled with loving kindness. And pretty soon you feel good with all the people going by on the street or in slow traffic. You can do it on the bus. You can do it in the airplane. There's the story of Kalu Rinpoche. That's the last story I'll tell you. Who's this wonderful 85-year-old Tibetan Lama, the master of the yogas of Naropa, this gaunt old guy who lived in a cave in Tibet for 12 or 15 years in the earliest part of the century. Now he travels a great deal and kind of represents Tibetan Buddhism. And friends of mine took him one day to the Boston Aquarium, which is like the big Monterey Aquarium. It's a three-story high tank full of sharks and sea creatures and all these 100 different tanks of crustacea and tropical fishes and all kinds of eels and colored beings of every kind. And he loved it, and he went through kind of looking at all these beings. And as he went by each tank, after he was done looking, he would touch the glass softly, which you weren't supposed to do, but he couldn't read the sign. And then he would say a mantra. He would say, Om Mani Padme Hum. And then he'd go on to the next one, Om Mani Padme Hum, to each. And somebody said, What are you doing? Why do you do that? And he said, Oh, I tap on the glass to get the attention of the beings inside, and then I bless them so that they too might be liberated. And that's the way he goes through his life, that every being he meets, may you too be free, may you too be happy, may you too be liberated. It's a pretty amazing way to meet beings as they come into your life. You can practice that. And if you do it on the airplane, you're sitting there, instead of reading your junk book or whatever you do on airplanes, you put it down for a few minutes and you do the loving kindness. May that older man over there be happy and peaceful. May that teenager over there be peaceful, at least. And may that young child be filled with loving kindness, compassion. May that person... Pretty soon, you feel a relationship to all the people on the airplane. And you don't even know them. Now, I don't mean get weird about it. You know? Don't let them know. You just sit there and do it. But then when the plane lands or the bus stops, you could almost wave goodbye to these people. They become your friends. Bye, I'll see you later. Have a good life or whatever it is. Because you've connected with your heart to those other beings. Do you understand that? It's wonderful. And all these things can be trained and nourished and cultivated and developed. Use these tools and work with them well. If you want to go very deep in your spiritual life, you can. That's all. A chant for a minute and then we'll end. Hantamayang Buddha Ratana Satina Yanja Karoma Se Namo Tatsa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Samputatsa Bhutang Saranang Gacchami Dhammang Saranang Gacchami Sanghang Saranang Gacchami Anicca Vata Sankara Upatava Yadamino Upakitava Niruchanti Desang upasamo sukho anicca vata sankara. All things are impermanent. Upatava yadamino. They have the nature like seasons to arise for a time, to change and pass away. Upakitava niruchanti. To see this, to come to know this deeply. Desang upasamo sukho, and to live in harmony with this truth brings the highest happiness. So I thank you.
This concludes The Inner Art of Meditation, an introduction to Vipassana, or Buddhist Insight Meditation, with Jack Kornfield. The Inner Art of Meditation was produced from recordings generously provided by the Dharma Seed Tape Library, an extensive collection of audio and video cassettes originated in 1983 to provide a resource of meditative instruction, guidance, and inspiration by teachers who conduct retreats at the Insight Meditation Center. For a free catalog of the Dharma Seed Tape Library, please call 1-800-969-SEED or write the Dharma Seed Tape Library, Box 66, Wendell Depot, Massachusetts, 01380. For information about retreats with Jack Kornfield and other Insight Meditation instructors, please write the Insight Meditation Society, 1230 Pleasant Street, Barre, Massachusetts, 01005, or write to Insight Meditation West, Spirit Rock Center, Box 909, Woodacre, California, 94973. If you would like additional copies of this tape set or a complete catalog of transformational audio tapes, please call Sounds True, 1-800-333-9185, or write the Sounds True catalog, 735 Walnut Street, Boulder, Colorado, 80302. Thanks for listening.